All right. Hello, everyone, and happy holiday weekend in the U.S. This is, although it's not really the end of summer, because the end of summer comes around September 20th, I think. It's kind of a traditional end of summer here. We kind of consider summer from Memorial Day to Labor Day, and this is Labor Day weekend, so this is the traditional, not official, end of summer. So I hope everybody is having a good time. We are here now for the guiding light, which means we will be looking at the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi, and we will start a new section tonight. We're going to start the section called Self and Individuality, which is on page 57. So before I dig into that, I'm going to play a song, and the song that I selected tonight is from the 1960s. It's Peter, Paul, and Mary, Blowin' in the Wind.
How many roads must a man walk down before they call him a man? Must a white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? How many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer just doesn't see. The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. How many times must a man look up before he can see the sky? How that too many people have died? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
When I hear that song, what I really hear is, you know, how long will we continue to listen to ego, right? So as I mentioned, we are here for the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. We're starting a new section called Self and Individuality. And I'll just jump right in. So the devotee asks, does not death dissolve the individuality of a person so that there can be no rebirth, just as the rivers discharged into the ocean lose their individualities? And Ramana Maharshi says, but when the waters evaporate and return as rain on the hills, they once more flow in the form of rivers and fall into the ocean. So also the individualities during sleep lose their separateness and yet return as individualities according to their samskaras or past tendencies. Even so it is in death. And the individuality of the person with samskaras is not lost. I'm going to read a little further before I comment. Because the devotee says, how can that be? And Ramana Maharshi says, see how a tree whose branches have been cut grows again. So long as the roots of the tree remain unimpaired, the tree will continue to grow. Similarly, the samskaras, which have merely sunk into the heart on death, but have not perished for that reason, occasion rebirth at the right time, and that is how jivas are reborn. And this conversation continues, but I'll go ahead and pause there for now. So samskaras then, which is a Sanskrit word, refers to past tendencies or impressions created by previous actions and thoughts. And the jiva is the individual. So it's interesting the examples that Ramana Maharshi is giving. This first example about, the waters run into the ocean and lose their individuality, but then the waters evaporate, return as rain, and once more flow in the form of rivers, before they dissolve into the ocean again. I'm trying to figure out how to talk about this when I'm not in person with you, because usually when I'm in person with someone, I use like a, a visual aid to help explain what I'm about to say. And I don't have a visual aid when we have audio only. One thing that I feel that I have observed is that when people or even animals die, they aren't necessarily absorbed immediately upon death. The manifestation can seem to linger in a non-body type of way. I have, for years, had visitations from people that I know after their death, sometimes without even knowing they were dead. One of these visitations was an uncle of mine. This was way back, around the time that I was probably 30 years old, and now I'm 58, so we're really talking, 28 years ago. I was at work one day, and I had an uncle. Now, he wasn't, he was actually my mother's sister's ex-husband, which means officially he wasn't even my uncle anymore, right? He wasn't a blood relative. He had been married to my aunt, and they had divorced, I don't know how long before, many years before, and I hadn't seen him in many years. But when I was a child growing up, he was her husband, so he was my uncle, right? But they did divorce later. But I hadn't thought about this man in a long time. And I was at work one day, just working, focusing on work. And all of a sudden, my mind became flooded with memories of him. Very pleasant memories from when I was a child. Just flooded with memories. And it was so sweet. Later that day or the next day, I got a phone call from my mom and was told he had passed. And that was the first time that I recognized that I had been visited by a loved one after their physical passing. And I've had many of those experiences since then, and sometimes not even people that I know well, possibly even one person that I didn't know at all. But I seem to have a lot of visitations from people when they pass. If there's some kind of a connection, you know, apparently they know I'm open to it, and I receive these visitations shortly after their death. So it seems to me that people are not necessarily absorbed immediately, and maybe some people are not absorbed for a long time. I've also had the experience of seeing, you know, what we would call a ghost. And you know, I don't really know exactly what a ghost is, except that it seems like someone who held on to their individuality after the passing of the body, and therefore was not absorbed into, I'll call it the light for now, into consciousness, right? But what's interesting about people who have not yet been absorbed, whether it's for a short time after their death, whether saying their goodbyes, or whether it's for a long time, you know, like as a ghost, somebody who seems to cling to their last identity, is when someone has not yet been absorbed yet, the identity that they have is the one they had in this lifetime. Right? That's still the identity. So the identity is still in place. Once the absorption happens, that identity disappears. But what Ramana Maharshi is saying is that if there are past tendencies that were, you know, within what we might call the mind of that individual, those past tendencies actually, you know, for lack of better words, they create a spot on consciousness. If you imagine consciousness is like a ball of dough. And, you know, you can take a ball of dough and you can pull out like a long piece, you know, still connected. Imagine like pulling out like a spaghetti, kind of a spaghetti long piece from the dough. And then you can pat it back into the dough, right? So if we imagine pulling out this long piece of spaghetti, then the long piece of spaghetti still connected to the dough, but this long thin piece of spaghetti would be like an individual person. And after death and after absorption, that gets padded back into the dough. But if there were past tendencies that have not been resolved, which really means let go of, disbelieved, those past tendencies create a spot on consciousness so that another birth can occur. Another long piece of spaghetti can come out of consciousness at the point of that spot and create another individual with the same tendencies until they're healed. And the reason that happens is because these tendencies are not individual. They seem individual, but they're not individual. They're consciousness. Consciousness manifests as the individual. So they're tendencies on consciousness. And so when that, I'll call it new individual, is incarnated with the same tendencies, it isn't a soul in the way that we think of individual souls. It's consciousness manifesting as a new individual with the same tendencies that have not yet been resolved. Everything belongs to consciousness. So jivas, as he calls them, or people as we think of them, individuals, are temporary manifestations of consciousness. And at some point, each and every person is reabsorbed into consciousness. But anything that is not resolved, well then, regenerate as a new individual and another opportunity to resolve or let go of those tendencies. And so the way Ramana Maharshi described that, a new noodle, yeah. And so the way Ramana Maharshi describes that is, when the waters, you know, so first let me go back to the question, because that's really the first part of the description. does not death dissolve the individuality of a person so that there can be no rebirth, just as the rivers discharged into the ocean lose their individualities, right? And that does happen. Every individual does end in consciousness. But then Ramana Maharshi says, but when the waters evaporate and return as rain on the hills, they once more flow in the form of rivers and then fall into the ocean. So also the individualities during sleep lose their separateness and yet return as individuals according to their past tendencies. Even so it is in death. The individuality of the person with samskaras is not lost. And the devotee, knowing, this devotee seems to know that people are absorbed. And so the devotee says, how can that be? You know, if you're absorbed, how can you come back, right? And Ramana Maharshi says, see how a tree whose branches have been cut grows again. Now, we actually have a tree at my house in the backyard that several years ago, I don't know how long, you know, maybe 4 years ago, we had a really early frost here. And the early frost killed a lot of trees in Pueblo West, including it looked like it killed the tree in my backyard. All of the branches died. But what I started noticing in the spring, even though all of the branches on this tree were dead and so there were no new leaves coming on these branches, what I noticed is new branches were beginning to come out of the trunk. They weren't the same old branches coming back to life. They were new branches popping out of the trunk. So we talked to a arborist who said if we would cut off all of the old branches, that the new branches, the tree would be reborn. And so we did that. We hired them to come in and cut off all the old branches. And at first it looked really funny. It was a goofy looking tree. But you know what? Now it looks pretty good. And in fact, I think every time Francine comes over and looks out the window, she's like, wow, that tree looks really good. Because of course she saw it, you know, when it died, apparently died. And she saw it, you know, when we cut off all the branches. And now she looks at it and you know, you would never know that it went through that. But the old branches were not reborn. New branches came out of the trunk because there was still life in the trunk, right? So it wasn't a rebirth of the branches that were dead. The branches that were dead and they were cut off. But new branches sprung out of that life. So Ramana Maharshi says, see how a tree whose branches have been cut grows again. So long as the roots of the tree remain unimpaired, the tree will continue to grow. Similarly, the samskaras, which have merely sunk into the heart on death, but have not perished for that reason, occasion rebirth at the right time. And that is how jivas are reborn. The devotee says, how could the innumerable jivas and the wide universe whose existence is correlative to that of the jivas sprout up from such subtle samskaras sunk in the heart? Ramana Maharshi says, just as the big banyan tree sprouts from a tiny seed, so do the jivas and the whole universe with name and form sprout up from the subtle samskaras. So it seems like that what this person is thinking is that the tendencies belong to a person, you know, like Regina, right? Let's say Regina has the tendency to over-exaggerate, right? She over-exaggerates everything all of the time. And, you know, all the way into her death, she's over-exaggerating. Well, when Regina dies, and Regina is absorbed into consciousness, this person seems to be thinking that the over-exaggeration should also end. But the over-exaggeration was only manifested through Regina. The over-exaggeration and whatever belief led to the over-exaggeration, possibly the I am bad belief, or, you know, I need attention, whatever led to the over-exaggeration, that was not resolved or healed in the lifetime of this Regina that I'm talking about, this made-up Regina. And actually, Regina was just a manifestation of that. That is an idea in consciousness. And so, because the idea was not resolved, another individual will be born with the same tendency. You know, through the I am bad thought, thinking I need attention, and therefore exaggerating. But it's not a rebirth of Regina. Just like it's not a rebirth of the branches on my tree. You know, those branches were cut off and new branches grew out of the same trunk. And in this case, we could say the trunk is, you know, the I am bad belief and some tendencies that come from that. And it seems like this person thinks that those tendencies, they're so small. So what? You know, there was this person who needed attention because she thought she wasn't good enough and she died. You know, why would that create a whole new rebirth? And Ramana Maharshi is explaining the entire world, the entire universe comes from these ideas that just loop over and over again. And you guys know the code, so you know how that works. When the ideas are believed, they go, they are processed by the creative principle, and a new manifestation occurs, right? And that new manifestation can be a new circumstance in the world, and it can be a new, quote, person with the same tendencies. So Ramana Maharshi says, just as the big banyan tree sprouts from a tiny seed, so do the jivas, or the people, and the whole universe, with name and form, sprout up from subtle samskaras, or past tendencies. The devotee says, how does individuality emanate from the absolute self, and how is its return made possible? Ramana Maharshi says, as a spark proceeds from fire, individuality emanates from the absolute self. The spark is called the ego. In the case of the enlightened one, the ego identifies itself with some object simultaneously. Oops. I think that means enlightened one, but this sentence isn't making sense, so let me double check that. It's ajnani. Maybe that doesn't mean enlightened one. Oh, no, it means ignorant one, one who has not realized the self. So let me do that sentence again. It wasn't making sense. As a spark proceeds from fire, individuality emanates from the absolute self. The spark is called the ego. In the case of the ignorant one, the ego identifies itself with some object simultaneously with its rise. It cannot remain without such association with objects. This association is due to ignorance, whose destruction is the objective of one's efforts. If this tendency to identify with self with objects is destroyed, the ego becomes pure, and then it also merges into its source. The false identification of oneself with the body, or the I am the body idea, is the I am the body idea, sorry. The false identification of oneself with the body is the I am the body idea. This must go before good results can follow. You know, I made a comment once. I don't remember who I was talking to, but I made a comment that enlightenment needs to happen during lifetime. You know, while we appear to be in body. And this person said, I don't believe that. You know, I think that after death, you know, we could become enlightened. And if that's true, that would need to happen prior to absorption into consciousness. You know, so I remember I mentioned that not everything, I think, is absorbed immediately. In fact, to be honest, I had experiences with Jamie the dog in the first 24 hours after she passed. The experiences seemed to be her showing me what it felt like to be her in the end. You know, I felt what it felt like. I just had the same experience. I felt what it felt like for her to walk on rocks or uneven ground. I felt what her mouth felt like. Apparently she needed dental work and we weren't aware of it. And one whole side of her mouth ached. You know, so it seems like, you know, not everything is absorbed immediately. Maybe no one is. Maybe only the enlightened are. I mean, I don't know. But it seems like there is this period where the identity remains intact after the body has died. And so the absorption doesn't occur right away. If I was to hazard a guess, but it's just a guess, so please don't write this down as a fact, I would say most things are probably absorbed within a few days to a few weeks after they pass. So during that period of time when the individual is, quote, dead, the body is dead, but there's still identification with the personality and with the subtle body and with the lifetime, you know, I suppose it's possible that enlightenment could happen during that time. But once the absorption has occurred, there is no one there to let go of false beliefs anymore. Right? There's no one there to let go of false beliefs anymore. And so those false beliefs become, you know, like I said, a spot on consciousness through which a new life comes into being with those same beliefs. And so what Ramana Maharshi is really explaining here is that, you know, when a person is born, at birth, or shortly after birth, I don't know exactly when this occurs, but the tendencies are there at birth. The tendencies, if we're born from a spot on consciousness, which is really just very symbolic, I hope you understand. But if we're born from a spot on consciousness, the tendencies are there. The tendencies, you could say, are in our DNA or something like that, right? And they don't develop necessarily immediately as an infant, but they will develop with the appropriate time in that lifetime. So we're born with these tendencies, and a part of one of these key tendencies that we're born with is the belief that I am a body. The ego identification with the object. That's a tendency that we are all born with, and that's why when people teach us our name, you know, we accept that I am Regina, and when we say I am Regina or whatever your name is, we mean this body. Right? We accept that because we were born with that tendency. We were ready to accept that. And if we die physically with that same tendency never having been healed, then what's going to happen is that another person will be born with that same spot and that same tendency. So if we all die still attached to the belief that I am this person, the person's going to end. The person will eventually be absorbed. But the ego, or the I am the body idea, did not end. And so another person or persons are born from that same past tendency. So what Ramana Maharshi is saying is, the I am the body idea or the ego idea must end before we die in order not to create another spot on consciousness and therefore not to result in another birth with the same tendency. Again, how does individuality emanate from the absolute self, and how is its return made possible? As a spark, this is Ramana Maharshi, as a spark proceeds from fire, individuality emanates from the absolute self. The spark is called the ego. In the case of ignorance, the ego identifies itself with some object simultaneously with its rise. So that would be like saying the ego identifies with a body simultaneous to the point that it's born. And like we all know, small babies don't actually have that I am the body idea, but the tendency is already in them, right? They were born with that tendency. The tendency is already in them. The ego cannot remain without such association with objects. The association is due to ignorance. Now listen to this. Whose destruction is the objective of one's efforts. So he's really saying that our job in this lifetime is to, he uses the word destroy, but I'm going to say to let go of or to become free of the idea that I am the body, that I am the person, even I am the mind, you know, the ego. That's our role. And we do it for all of consciousness. And Kathy says, would that tendency, I am a body, not be everyone's tendency at birth? Just on the word everyone, let me comment on that first. I can't fully comment on everyone. I don't know if sometimes persons are born out of what we'll call a clean aspect of consciousness and therefore born enlightened. Some people claim that this happens. I don't know for sure if it does or not. So I'm going to say I don't know about the everyone statement. But by far most people, yes. By far most people are born from a past tendency, which is the belief in the false self. And because they are born from that past tendency, they also have that past tendency. But again, what Ramana Maharshi is saying is that our job as spiritual aspirants is to free ourselves of that past tendency. And when we free ourselves of that past tendency and then die and are reabsorbed, at least that portion of the spot on consciousness is cleared. Right? I mean, imagine consciousness for a moment as a dirty window. And it's kind of like, when we free ourselves of the belief that I am this body, that I am this person, and then pass away as what we would call an enlightened person, that part of the window is now clean. And again, the mistake that we make is we think that, we think that we are people, of course, and so we think that this healing is for me, the person. But what Ramana Maharshi is explaining is it's for consciousness. And that consciousness will continue to generate manifestations of ignorance as long as we do not use our lifetimes while we're in manifestation to become free of ignorance. If we die still in a place of ignorance, another manifestation will occur with that same ignorance. So the association with the ego is due to ignorance, whose destruction is the objective of one's efforts. That's the purpose of our life, is to become free of that belief. If this tendency to identify the ego with objects is destroyed, the ego becomes pure and then also merges into its source. The false identification of oneself with the body is the I am the body idea. This must go before good results can follow. This must go before good results can follow. So again, he's making it very clear, from his perspective, what the primary purpose of any manifestation is, and that is to become free of the belief that I am the person. We could call that awakening to at least unity consciousness, right? And then as we do that, consciousness as a whole is becoming free of that false belief. This is why Ramana Maharshi has often said that the greatest service you can render is your own self-realization. The greatest service you can render is your own self-realization. Now again, Ramana Maharshi has been using the word destroy here. And so the devotee says, how am I to eradicate it? Meaning this I am the body idea or this I am a person idea. Okay, let me look up another word before I read this sentence. Susputi or something like that. Okay, deep sleep is what it means. So I'll just read it with English. You exist in deep sleep without being associated with the body and the mind. But in the other two states, you are associated with them. And by the other two states, he means waking and dreaming. If you were one with the body, how could you exist without the body in deep sleep? You can separate yourself from what is external to you, but not from that which is one with you. Hence, the ego cannot be one with the body. This must be realized in the waking state. The three states are studied in order to gain this knowledge. So, I obviously was not raised Hindu, but I can tell from my reading of Ramana Maharshi and Nisargadatta Maharaj that there really is a lot of study and contemplation of the three states that we call deep sleep, dreaming, and waking. And deep sleep is the state that's always compared truth. Deep sleep is the state where we are absorbed each day for a short period of time. And by absorbed, I mean we are not an individual in deep sleep. In dreams, we can, be reborn as an individual, usually ourself, but occasionally even someone else. I've had a couple dreams in this lifetime where I wasn't Regina, I was someone else. But in deep sleep, there is no person. There is no identity with the body. There's no identity with the mind. It all goes away. And so that is often compared to the absorption that occurs after death. And so, really, Ramana Maharshi is just comparing the same comparison. He's saying that, when you are in deep sleep, you do not identify with the ego. You do not identify with the body. He says that the goal is to also not identify with the ego, not identify with the body during the waking state. Right? To the same degree. And contemplate for a moment when you are in deep sleep, not dreaming, how much do you think your Ruby or Jacqueline or Monica or Jim or Nancy or Kathy or Eileen or Sonia or anyone else, Anne, right? Not at all, Kathy says. That's the same degree to which we do not want to be identified with that idea when we're awake. When we are not at all identified with the idea, I am Regina or I am this body, then we are egoless. And that is what Ramana Maharshi sees as the goal of a lifetime, of any lifetime, is to reach that state. The devotee says, how can the ego, which is confined to two of the states, meaning, of course, dreaming and waking, endeavor to realize that which comprises all three states? And Ramana Maharshi says, the ego in its purity is experienced in the intervals between two states or between two thoughts. The ego is like the worm, which leaves one hold only after it catches another. Its nature is known when it is out of contact with objects or thoughts. You should realize this interval as the abiding, unchangeable reality, your true being, through the conviction gained by the study of the three states. Now, again, he's probably talking to a Hindu because he's recommending that the Hindus study these three states, and I'm not going to recommend that to y'all, although I have recently recommended that you contemplate deep sleep. I did that in Gentle Healing. But what Ramana Maharshi is saying is even in the waking state, there are moments when we are not identified with the false self, with the body or the mind. And he's saying we should notice these moments and realize that in those moments we are abiding as our unchangeable reality, our true being. So when do these moments occur? Well, today I went hiking. And I remember a moment when a breeze came. And I remember a few seconds of just feeling the breeze on my face. There was no thought during those few seconds. There was just feeling the breeze on my face. Right? That was a moment when there was not a thought about I as Regina. It was just feeling the breeze on the face. And he wants us to start noticing that we have these moments throughout the day when we are not caught up in thinking. Yeah, Kathy says she had that yesterday with a breeze. When we are not caught up in thinking, we're not caught up in identification, and start recognizing those moments of just being as our true self. And one thing that what we have learned is that what you put your attention on, or especially if you have gratitude for it, but what you put your attention on kind of expands in your own experience. So if you're putting your attention on your I thoughts, you're thinking about me all the time, right? Well, then that's really all you're going to notice. And, of course, stay very deeply identified with the body-mind personality. But if you start putting your attention on those moments that naturally occur, right, when that breeze hits your face and for a moment you just feel the breeze, that's not thinking. That's a moment of non-thinking that naturally occurred. But if you notice it and start putting your attention on that, you may begin to notice that you have more and more and more of those experiences. You will begin to notice that you exist without body, mind, personality identification. Right? You exist without any body, mind, personality identification. And you do it, you know, all the time. So the devotee says, how can the ego, which is confined to two of the states, endeavor to realize that which comprises all three states, which would be the true self, right? And again, Ramana Maharshi says that says that its true nature is known when it is out of contact with objects or thoughts. And you should realize this interval as the abiding, unchangeable reality, your true being. The devotee says, can I not remain in deep sleep as long as I like and also be in it at will, just as I am in the waking state? What is the enlightened one's experience of these three states? Okay, this is a pretty long answer, so let's see if we read the whole thing or if we pause. It has a lot of words in it, too, that I might have to look up. Ramana Maharshi says, deep sleep does exist in your waking state also. And I will pause there for a moment because, you know, for many of us, when we hear deep sleep does exist in your waking moments also, we're like, what the heck? You know? But we recently, in Gentle Healing, were reading Rupert Spira. Rupert Spira actually started with a quote from Ramana Maharshi that said, anything that doesn't exist in deep sleep isn't real. But he went on to explain that the only thing that exists in deep sleep is peace, and that we actually are that peace, right? We are that peace that exists in deep sleep. And that when we wake up, that peace that we are is still here. It's just that all of the images and thoughts and sounds and everything else gets laid on top of it. And so the peace appears not to be, especially if we're focused on all of that other stuff. But actually the peace is like the screen in the cinema, right? The peace is still there, but just like the screen in the cinema, you notice the screen in the cinema before the movie starts, right? But once the movie starts, you forget all about the screen. You're into the images. Well, the same thing happens. The peace is still here. But once we're in that waking state, we forget all about the peace and we're focused on the images. But the peace, which is what we are, is the foundation, and it's always here. And so that's what Ramana Maharshi is referring to right now when he's saying deep sleep does exist in your waking state also. He doesn't mean that our eyes are closed and we're snoring. He's referring to that peace. That which is there in deep sleep is there in waking state also. He says, you are in deep sleep even now. You should be consciously entered into and reached in this very awakened state. There is no real going in and coming out of it. Again, the peace doesn't go away. It's not like we go to sleep and now we're at peace and then we wake up and we're not at peace anymore. The peace is what we are. It's always here. There's no going in and out of it. To be aware of deep sleep in the waking state is samadhi. I'll go ahead and look up exactly how they translate it, but samadhi is often associated with meditation. It's the state of being aware of the real self. Let's see how they translate it here. Samadhi. Advanced state of meditation, absorption in the self. Yeah. So he's saying that when you are aware of that peace that you are, I sometimes call it the unaffectedness. When you are aware of that unaffectedness, even while everything is happening, he says that is samadhi. That's being absorbed in the self while still physically alive. He says the ignorant cannot remain long in deep sleep because he is forced by his nature to emerge from it. His ego is not dead and it will rise again and again. So, you know, we go to sleep at night, we fall into deep sleep and we are not identified with the ego. But then when we wake up, because the past tendencies are still there, especially the attachment to the idea that I am this body, mind, personality, we immediately wake up as the person. You know, that's what we wake up as. And start thinking about what we have to do today or how we don't want to be alive today or whatever this person thinks about, right? He says the ignorant cannot remain long in deep sleep because he is forced by his nature to emerge from it. His ego is not dead, and it will arise again and again. But the enlightened one crushes the ego at its source. It may seem to emerge at times, in his case, as if impelled by, and I got to look up a word here because I don't know what this word means. Let's see, prarabdha. Okay, prarabdha. Okay, as if the result of one's past actions encountered in the present life. So it's kind of another word for past tendencies in a way. So it may seem to emerge at times, in his case, also as if impelled by past tendencies. That is, in the case of the enlightened one also, for all outward purposes, past tendencies would seem to sustain or keep up the ego, as in the case of the ignorant, but there is a fundamental difference. That the ignorant's ego, when it rises up, is quite ignorant of its source. In other words, the ignorant is not aware of his deep sleep in his dream and waking states. In the case of the enlightened one, on the contrary, the rise or existence of the ego is only apparent, and he enjoys his unbroken transcendental experience in spite of such apparent rise or existence of the ego, keeping his attention always on the source. So, again, and this is really interesting. I'm sure I've read this before because it's underlined, but I don't really remember reading it before. But what Ramana Maharshi is saying, and this is really wonderful, I think. I think it might help free us from a lot of confusion, you know, especially if we know an enlightened one personally. He's saying you're still going to see, you know, that person's ego show up sometimes, right? So occasionally a past tendency may arise and you may see a flash of annoyance or a flash of anger. But in the case of the enlightened one, although that flash of annoyance or that flash of anger arose, the enlightened one itself, himself or herself, did not lose track of the peace, even while that little past samsara, that past tendency came and showed up for a moment and flew by. They didn't become distracted by it. They didn't believe it. It wasn't something their attention went into. It's just an old tendency that had not yet been fully cleared away, and it showed up and it passed, you know, hopefully very quickly. And the enlightened one still remained with the peace. Right? Still feels the peace, still knows the peace. So that would mean that your experience of an enlightened person and their experience of themselves could be very different. You know, you could say, I just saw you get angry, right? And the enlightened person might say, you know, well, I, you know, some anger arose, but I am not angry. You know, you're like, you're a liar. I saw you get angry. But that's because they're focused on the peace. That is their primary experience, even while this old tendency came and went. And of course, one thing that happens to us, I think, is that, you know, if we do happen to be around someone that is enlightened, and NTI cautions us about this in a few different places, I think that we have expectations, for example, that we will never see anger, or we will never see annoyance, or we will never see sadness, right? And so when one of these tendencies pass, then for us, the enlightened person falls off the pedestal we put them on. Because, you know, we walk out saying, you know, I just saw Ramana Maharshi get annoyed at that woman. Or I saw Ramana Maharshi get annoyed at his attendant. He's not enlightened. You know, but again, we're looking at him through our mind. We don't know his experience. Let me read this to you again. He says, in the case of the enlightened one, for all outward purposes, in other words, this is what you see on the outside, in the case of the enlightened one, for all outward purposes, past tendencies would seem to sustain or keep up the ego, as it does in the case of the ignorant person. But there is a fundamental difference, that the ignorant person's ego, when it rises up, is quite ignorant of its source. In other words, if I'm an ignorant person and I get angry, I'm pissed. I feel pissed. I'm upset about whatever happened. I'm completely in that. I'm not at all aware of the peace. Right? The ego, ignorant person, when this ego rises up, is quite ignorant of its source. In other words, the ignorant person is not aware of his deep sleep, or we could call it his peace, in his dream and waking states. In the case of the enlightened one, on the contrary, the rise or existence of the ego is only apparent. It's an appearance, right? And he enjoys his unbroken, transcendental experience in spite of such apparent rise or existence of the ego, keeping his attention always on the source. So what this really means is we cannot judge someone who may be enlightened by what we see on the outside. We can't know their experience by whether they appear annoyed with us or something like that. He also says this ego is harmless. It is merely like a skeleton of burnt rope, though with a form, it is useless to tie up anything. So, you know, if you think of a rope, if you were to light a rope on fire and burn it in its place, the ashes may still be in the shape of a rope, right? But those ashes have no substance. Like if you tried to pick them up and tie something up with it, you're not going to be able to, right? Like you could a rope. So he's saying that that this ego that may sometimes arise in an enlightened person is like the skeleton of a burnt rope. Although it has a form, it's useless to tie up anything. You know, the enlightened person isn't getting caught up in his own ego. The annoyance rose, the annoyance left. He was aware of the peace the whole time. There's no grievances. There's no samskaras, past tendencies that are being reborn out of that. It's nothing. It's literally nothing. But he says, by constantly keeping one's attention on the source, the ego is dissolved in that source like a salt doll in the sea. So that's pretty interesting. And I'm really happy that we read that. And I'm going to mark it now. Next week, I'll be here. Next week I will not be here. I'm taking a trip with my mom. It's the first time we've ever taken a trip together. So I will be back in 2 weeks. And the question will be, it will start with a new question. What is the significance of the crucifixion? Okay, Kathy says, if he was literally unaffected, then why would there be a reaction of anger, for instance, as visible? I think maybe a way to think of it, Kathy, is almost like a muscle spasm. You know, that until everything is truly cleared out of the, you know, of the body, it occasionally you see a muscle spasm. But what he's saying is his attention does not go to the muscle spasm. His attention remains with the source, with peace. And so it's kind of like if we think of the code quickly, you know how anything you've believed in the past. Oh, in fact, go read NTI Ephesians again if you can. In NTI Ephesians, it talks about how our past beliefs show up again so that we can respond to them differently. So we can think of them as echoes of the past. So in the past, this thing was believed. Here it is showing up again because it was believed in the past. But now the enlightenment is able to just see that appearance without giving it any new belief. Yeah. And we start having those experiences ourselves. You know, I'm not going to say that I'm enlightened or anything, but I do have those experiences. I see the Regina character without feeling it or believing it. You know, I can see. It's like a separation. A separation between my direct experience and what may be apparently occurring. And everyone else, if you haven't started having that experience, you will. Because it's a natural part of the awakening process. So then you'll know exactly what this is talking about. And it's time for me to let go of the mic, so I will do that too. Bye.